I'm sitting here with Aviva Weiss. She is an occupational therapist and the CEO of Fun and Function. Aviva, can you tell us what Fun and Function is? How did you come to develop it?
Sure. So Fun and Function is a company, and we create products and programming that help individuals with special needs. So it can be anything from a game that will help a child learn to develop their social emotional skills to a weighted garment or a weighted blanket that will help them calm down and focus, to programming that we will work with a school that helps them promote a concept such as inclusion. So that may include training, faculty training, product training, follow through, follow up, etc. So it's pretty broad. And we are, I think I'd like to call it fairly successful. We've grown significantly in the more than a decade that we've been around. And that's what we do.
Did you ever work as an occupational therapist?
I did. So I worked at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia as a freelance therapist. And I also worked at St. Christopher's.
Primarily with children?
Primarily with children, yeah.
Would you say that most of your products are directed at children?
So I would say that about 80% are. However, as those children get older, we are creating more and more product that appeal to teens and adults as well.
Can you talk a little bit about how a product moves from idea to reality?
Yeah, so product ideas can come from a variety of sources. It could come from any person internally on our team. And we have a sort of a place that we start storing the ideas. And once ideas can also come from our customer base or from anyone.
So you're interested in taking ideas from just whoever wants to offer something?
Yeah. And very often, like, we read reviews on products that come in and we say, oh, that's really interesting. They liked this, but they didn't like that. What can we do to meet that need? So that also could be a way an idea gets formed, just based on problems that come up, and we sort of look at that like an opportunity.
So I sort of want to go back. So how did you get from working at CHOP to Fun and Function? Like, what was that trajectory?
So I recognized that there was a need for products that were at that time kid-friendly. I'm also a mother, and I had one of my kids needed therapy, and I was like really a little surprised at the lack of sort of kid-friendly looking stuff. And I also found that the price points were very high. And I thought, hey, if it doesn't exist, what if I create it?
Do you come from like a background of entrepreneurship?
Well, I guess, yeah, my dad is like entrepreneurial in that he's been involved in businesses, but hasn't really started his own. My sister now runs her own clinic. So I guess, yes. But I think that the thing that most motivated me in my life was my grandmother, who went through the Holocaust and really instilled in me the privilege that I had for living in this country, for having opportunity, and really created a context where I understood that I had to do something with my life, where it wasn't just about waking up every day and getting through the day and going to sleep. It was about using the moments productively. So that's really, I think, what continues to empower me throughout my life.
So tell me about your grandmother again. I'm curious because I was so fortunate to have impactful and influential grandmothers who were really formative in my growing up.
So my grandmother was an amazing woman. I mean, I say that, I was her favorite granddaughter, and she did state that very openly.
Right. So I'm going to be careful because I'm not sure who else is listening right to this. So I'm going to pass on that.
I'm going to pass on that. Which is a problem. But she was an amazing woman, and she went through a lot of hardship in her life. She survived the Holocaust. She came to this country, to the United States, with nothing, and started all over again without, you know, knowing the language, without any money, without family. And she was a very optimistic person and was very grateful for the opportunities she had in this country. She was incredibly patriotic. She used to talk all about when she got her, when she became an American citizen, and with her very deep accent, she would talk
where
about.
Where was she from?
She was from Hungary. How proud she was to speak English to her children, even though she couldn't speak English. And she instilled in me this sense of pride for who I am. And she gave me unconditional love. No matter what I did, I was amazing. So that kind of goes against some, you know, the psychology of being specific about why someone is incredible and what they've done. But she just thought I was amazing. And no matter what I did, I always knew I could call her. And she thought I was God's gift to this earth.
And you are. I think each person,
thank you.
Each person is, because
yes,
they're a
absolutely.
Unique person. I just heard something so, something that really touched me, that when it's your birthday, it was God's time to say, you are needed in this world, and I'm adding you to the world. What an incredible...
Yeah, that's amazing.
Right? An incredible thing that your presence is needed.
Yeah, and that's what she gave me. She gave me this sense of, like, if I wasn't doing well in a class, or I knew someone was upset at me, I always knew, well, she thinks I'm awesome, so I guess, like, something about me is decent, you know? But... I feel like that was her presence, and she continues to be a presence in my life. Even though she's no longer alive, she is still present in me.
Was she part of your life through adulthood?
Yes. She was part of my life through adulthood. But I feel her cheering me on. And I feel like it is so important that every person has that individual in their life who gives them that unconditional love and that unconditional, just that space to be who they are, no matter if they have a good day. I knew no matter if I had a good day or a bad day, I was awesome in her eyes, and I am awesome in her
right,
eyes.
Right. So her presence and her voice is in your head.
Correct. All the time.
All the time.
All the time. And I know I continue to make her proud. And yeah, that was very empowering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm just thinking about my own grandmothers,
yeah.
And that their presence is so present in my
yeah.
life, you know, even today. And I see them, I hear them, and that knowing that you have cheerleaders,
yeah.
Wow, you can go really, really, really far.
And that relationship also, like when she got older and she was alone, and I used to spend a lot of time with her. I used to walk home from school. I went to school in Brooklyn, Flatbush, and I used to walk to her house in Borough Park after school.
That's a far walk.
I didn't like the city bus. I would walk, you know, one or two days a week and spend the night with her. And that also, I believe, that unconditional love made me want to do anything I could for her and gave me the capacity to give. And I think that, you know, giving like that at a young age, you know, a kid who's in high school and feels a sense of responsibility for an elderly person. And
do you think that people, you were very fortunate, right, to have a grandmother like this. When someone doesn't have their own biological relative who can be that unconditional, loving person, do you think that you can find someone, a person can find someone else in their life who can be that person?
I do think so. I think people can find mentors, and that I think that's really important. And the other thing that, you know, I started doing a long time ago is I call it self-appreciation moments. Where if I'm feeling beat up about something, and I don't do this all the time and I should do it more often, but I found myself telling my spouse why I am wonderful. And then we coined them self-appreciation moments. And now when I do it, he's like, oh, is this a self-appreciation moment? I'm like, it is. Can you listen, please? and agree with me.
But it's not an ego trip.
No, it's just about
recognizing what you're contributing to the world and that it needs to be recognized.
Let me tell you why I am such a good mother. This morning when blah, blah, blah happened, I was present even though I wasn't feeling well and I was really tired and I could have left.
Right. So, actually,
so I'm patting myself on the back.
Patting yourself on the back, but you're also noticing those moments and highlighting them.
Correct.
Instead of just sort of letting them slide by. And then when you can then sort of draw upon them.
Correct. I think that
you're filling your bank, sort of your self-appreciation bank account.
Correct.
And then you're making withdrawals at times that you need them.
Correct. So I do think it's important to have that someone in your life who believes in you, but you can also believe in yourself. And you could be—you can also be that someone in your life.
I mean, you could be your own grandmother.
Correct.
In whatever way that means.
She gave me the capacity to be that person in my life on some days when I need to be and say to myself, you can do this.
Was there a point when you were starting out with this idea that, was it complicated because you were from?
So I never really looked at that as an obstacle. I look at that as an opportunity. I have access to something that is very meaningful and creates boundaries and gives my life meaning. So I really never looked at that as an obstacle, and never thought of it as something that would limit me. I just looked at what I could do and not necessarily what I couldn't do. So I look at it as an opportunity to be the best version of who I am within this context of being a religious woman.
I think that's such a healthy approach. So you recognized that there was a need. And then, like, what were some of the steps that had to be put in place in order for this to become a reality?
So I think the biggest benefit that I had, and my husband Chesky joined, and we now work together, was that we didn't know anything. And sometimes...
That's interesting that you see that as a plus.
Because sometimes, well... People, I think individuals and entities that stand out are those who do things differently than everybody else, right? To be the same is to just
sort of be mediocre.
So the fact that we didn't know how to do it the right way. And so we kind of did it our way. And yeah, we made a lot of mistakes along the way when we figured out our way, but we were able to forge our own path as far as creating a sustainable business. Whereas... if we would have gone and looked at the conventional path, there would have been a lot of naysayers who would have said, oh, that's not possible, or you can't do that, or don't try that because it's going to fail. So we didn't really know anything about what would fail.
I think it's wonderful that you look at it, or you looked at it as something exciting to start something sort of fresh and unknown. I think a lot of people are intimidated by that.
Yeah, so again, going back to... For me personally, my grandmother, and Chesky, I'm sure, has his own story of what motivated him, because he dealt with a lot of the financial stress that came along with it. And I sort of relied on him to deal with that stress. But I was very close with her, but I always looked at what she went through. Like, she went through the Holocaust. She lost, you know, a lot of her family. She rebuilt her life. She learned a new language. She started out in a new culture. She raised children. Hey, if she could do that, I could do anything.
Right. So that really empowered her struggles, empowered you.
Yeah. And the biggest risk is failure. And failure isn't necessarily a bad thing if you use it as a stepping stone to say, what could I learn from this experience and what could I take from it?
That sounds like my grandmother.
Yeah.
To say, what do we learn from this?
Yeah. So it's not failure in the sense where we all fail every day. I mean, we fail in aspects of our lives, but it's like, okay, so that really didn't go off so well. What could I take from that? What could I do differently? So it's really, I don't look at success or even failure as like one big, huge moment in time. I look at it as we succeed or fail at like hundreds of thousands of micro decisions that we make. And then we pivot from each of those things, which lead to yet another decision. So it's really the culmination of all of those micro moments that end up, I think, turning it to success or failure, if you will.
I think that approach, I just heard a term which I think is great. It's not feedback, it's feed forward.
Yeah.
So that you're constantly using that information to, I like the word that you use, pivot, and it's just another tool along the journey.
Right. I mean, it's not to say that there weren't like you know, hard times and days where we were like stressed out. I mean, we get stressed out all the time, but I think it's this capacity to get up the next day and say, today's going to be a good day. Like today there's going to be opportunity and today we're going to figure this out. So, and sometimes it's not the next day. Sometimes it's a week or a month or a few months later, but it's not giving up. It's just constantly saying, okay, I'm ready. I could do this.
Right. And it's a way of framing it.
Yeah.
And looking at failure as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Not as a stumbling block.
Right.
So what were some of the steps that were part of this journey in terms of the implementation of this really incredibly innovative and exciting idea that you had to develop these tools for kids?
So there was figuring out like just, you know, the basics of business, like what's a profit and loss statement, what are financials, figuring out how do we manufacture these ideas, how do we make them?
Yeah, so how do you make them? Like what like?
So, I mean, today there's so much opportunity because, I mean, we live in the age of Alibaba. You could go online and you could find a vendor fairly quickly. You know, at this point, we've visited our vendors. We know who they are.
Have you had to travel a lot?
So I personally don't travel a whole lot just because I have an obligation to my family right now. But I have traveled and we have people within the company who travel on our behalf. So it's finding vendors. It's figuring out how to make product that is quality, that meets the needs of whatever it is that we're trying to meet of the people that we serve. It's figuring out how to market it, how to sell it, how to create, way back when it was creating a website and how to do that. But then how do you find an audience? How do you build that audience? How do you retain that audience, right? And then how do you constantly innovate to stay ahead and to be relevant to people?
Do you find that people are surprised when they see a woman behind the face of the company? Or that's something that in today's day and age is...
I think that sometimes, I try not to think about it too much, but I have seen some, I remember we were, we've been on the Philadelphia 100 list for quite a while, for quite a few years. And I went to one of the award ceremonies and they didn't tell you where you ranked on the list. They just tell you that you were on the list and the award ceremonies and this.
And this is for the top 100.
The fastest growing companies in the Philadelphia region. So we actually had a lot of gratitude to the SBDC, the Small Business Development Center at Wharton, they've helped us a lot along the way when we had questions. And our mentor was going to be there, so we felt like it was really important to attend, just to be thankful. I don't really like these events. So Chesky was home with the kids. He's like, you go. And I said, no, you go. He said, no, you go. So finally, like, I pulled myself together really quickly, ran out of the house, sort of missed the reception part, but went to the award ceremony. And they kept, they started out at 99, the 99th company on the list, and they kept going up and up and up and up. And it was measuring growth, right? So it wasn't really measuring revenues or profits. It was measuring growth, which at the time we didn't have a lot of. But and then they said, and when we get to the top 10, if you could please come up on the stage. And when they were ready in the 20s, I was like, oh no, either we're not on the list or we're up there. And then I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to go on the stage. I didn't even like put myself together properly. And most of the people coming up were like middle-aged men. And then they called us and we were number 7.
Wow.
And I was just like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And I don't know. I maybe was at the time, I was like in my low 30s and I'm petite. And I got up there and I saw the faces of some of the people like, are you sure you're the right person to be here? Because it didn't fit. And yeah, it's like moments like that where it's like, you sure it's not like, you know, your mom or something like that, or your dad or someone else in your life is supposed to be up here. But I look at it, like I said, as an opportunity, because so if people are going to underestimate me for who I am and what I represent, then that's great. Cause it gives me an in to
show them
to have the space to actually do something about it when they're not really quite expecting it. So
Sure, catch them off guard.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there hurdles that you're facing now once you're sort of now and you're in full swing?
Of course there are hurdles. I mean, there's so many hurdles. I mean, for starters, Amazon's taking over the world, right? So, and they're slowly like taking over every niche that ever existed. I mean, our own keywords are competing with Amazon, and it's like, how do we pivot? What do we do about that, right? So there's that.
Are you networking with other small businesses to try to strategize, or this is something that you need to be figuring out on your own?
Well, no, I mean, we have this really robust school market where we've created, first of all, our program is research-based. That took 3 years till we had it evaluated, studied. We had a white paper written up. That took a very long time. So we have a program that's research-based that has training and follow-up and product that it's not just, here's this. It's like,
so you've really worked through this in a very methodical.
Yeah. And then we're also working on technology now that we really think could really change everything that we're doing. So we're pivoting, and we're not just creating product, we're creating technology to support it. We're creating programming. So
do you find that that's stimulating, that the stretching and the figuring out?
Yeah. I mean, the hardest part for me is my brain does not shut down. And I wish it would sometimes, because it's like a little bit too much. But yeah, I love that. I like the challenge. Sometimes I get like nervous or frustrated and things take a very long time. And I, like the rest of us, live in a world of instant gratification. So I want it now.
Like the rest of
us. Like the rest of us. But I find it a fun challenge to wake up and be working on a project or something that's interesting, that is challenging, that could fail. And
it's tackling it from another angle.
Yeah.
And trying to come at it. And how do I figure this out? And
it's also staying true to our mission statement, which is empowering different. So how do we empower people to embrace their differences and recognize that their differences are what give them their own competitive advantage. So how do we do that? How do we promote that? And there's a lot of ways to promote that.
Do you see yourself also working with adults, or it's primarily kids?
Oh, it's adults as well. Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, we're pivoting from, oh, here's this for your kid. And it's like, here's this solution to allow you to live your life and not somebody else's life.
So that's interesting. Meaning, aside from the adults who are working with the children, you're now seeing adults as a target audience.
Correct.
And so that opens up a whole nother area of development of product to address adult needs.
Correct. Right.
And truthfully, this population is really aging up.
Correct.
So yeah. Now you're providing goods and services.
Right.
To a different population. I think it's fascinating, because you're able to expand the business model to then really address and serve more.
Right.
Many more.
And I also find that when you enjoy what you're doing and you believe in what you're doing, and it gives you a deep sense of
purpose.
It's not just about, well, how do we make more money? It's about, well, how do we make a difference in the world? And when that's
motivating, tell me about that mission. Say the mission statement.
We call it empowering different.
Right.
But in general, when you wake up and you have a sense of purpose and you have a mission and you feel empowered by what you're doing, it doesn't feel like work, and it feels fun, and not every day, but most days. And
goes back to it's your name. Not fun exactly. And function.
But it's not just about, well, how do we make more money? It's about doing what you love, and then you happen to make money
and contributing.
Correct. Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, it's healthy in approach, and the results are enormous.
Yeah.
And enormously impactful.
Yeah.
Tell me about work-life balance, because it sounds like you're thinking about this all the time. How does home fit in? Are you at the office all the time? Are you home? How do you navigate that?
So Husky and I have 8 kids, so we have a lot to balance.
That sounds like a lot to balance.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, sometimes it's maybe work-life imbalance, and it could be.
And maybe that's okay.
And that's okay.
To recognize that that happens.
It's not about perfection. It's about trying your best. So some days I feel more balanced and some days I feel less balanced. And some days I'm okay with that and some days I'm not, but that's okay. And I would like to think that I put my family first. I am home with them when they leave in the morning. I am like to be home when they come home from school. Some days I'm not, but I usually am. And I find that work gives me the capacity to be a better mother because I feel much more fulfilled and creative. And raising small children is hard, but fulfilling, like anything in life. It's, you know, I feel like I find that the things that are the most gratifying in life were not necessarily fun all the time. So I find that what I do at work allows me to be a better mother. And then being a mother really spills into my work because I could be a better manager, a better leader. I could create better product because I'm living it. So it kind of...
So your work in a certain sense comes home, but in a functional way.
So it's a balance because they sort of connect with each other and feed into each other. But I am aware of the facts. I think I have more awareness on some days and less on others that at the end of our lives, our children don't say, she ran one awesome company or, you know, he made a lot of money or he like did the most conference calls or made the most sales of anyone in the company. They say she was a good mother and she was present and she was there for us and she was connected and she made a difference in our lives. So I try to keep that in the front of me when sometimes I feel like I prefer to check my email than deal with the tantrum that's in front of me.
And don't we all.
And there's so many ways that we could check our email and we could just create an excuse. So,
and so check out of the mothering.
Correct.
And not be present, or be present and not be present.
Correct.
Right. Correct. And I think with technologies following you around or being in your pocket and the ease of technology, it really is hard.
Yeah.
To direct look,
and sometimes it's best to take a step away from that tantrum and say, you know, I love you and I'll be back when this is done. But, you know, many times it's important to be present and present in their lives and living in the moment and not being there, but not being there because you're engaged in something else. So we try very hard, Chesky and I, to create zones where we don't talk about what we do. I mean, Shabbos is one of those zones, right? We do not discuss business. Obviously.
And I bet that's hard because the two of you work together. So not even in terms of the two of you and your interaction, but it's hard to separate.
It is, but it's not hard anymore. It's harder when someone comes and says, hey, what do you do? And could you talk about it? And we don't want to talk about it. It's become like almost a safe zone where it's off the table. It's harder sometimes at dinner if something's happened during the day that I feel upset or he feels upset about or we feel passionate about or we want to talk about, but it's dinner time. So it's really not the time. I mean, I can't say that we're always perfect about it, but we really...
That's the goal.
Yeah, we really try to create zones where it's like, we're at home right now and we're with our kids right now. And that's the focus.
Right. So it sounds like Shabbos is a zone.
Shabbos is really one very sacred zone.
Dinner table.
Usually.
Like
I said, it's a balance. Sometimes it's a little imbalanced, but it's usually balanced.
Right. Are there calendar slots that are also zones?
I mean, I try to take kids out and spend special time with them. So those are things I try to schedule in to my calendar. Whereas, you know, we go out to coffee or to eat or whatever it is and spend some time together. So that's a zone where we're together.
Do you ever get to step away or does the business sort of follow you wherever you go?
Yeah, we get to step away. And I think the biggest challenge is allowing yourself to step away. Because
that
the way technology has been designed,
really hard.
It does feed that instant gratification loop. So it's like, well, what if I check? Well, what if something came in? So it's really like Shabbos is this beautiful zone where you cannot check.
Isn't that amazing how, you know, our lives were designed in such a 21st century healthy, functional way by a Torah that was...
It's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah.
I did buy a cookie jar that locks itself, that you can lock up your phone. But my kids realized that but the problem is if you lock it and you set the timer, you can't unlock it other than using a hammer to break it open. So I realized that being my children...
Maybe you could put that in your catalog.
And my kids find that very funny, and being that they're very technologically savvy, I realized that this may not be the best option. So I'll try to put it upstairs and charge it and go downstairs.
So you actually leave it upstairs?
Yeah, I try.
And at night?
At night, I do not put it in another room, which is something that, I mean, on Shabbos, I do charge it in another room because I don't want to, like, wake up in the morning and forget that it's Shabbos. So I don't want it to be near me because I don't want to ever, ever, ever fall into that. You know, sometimes you wake up and, you know, in the morning,
disoriented.
In the morning after I, you know, wake up, I check my email, right?
Right.
So I don't want to ever get disoriented. So I always put it away from what I'm usually used to.
I'm impressed how you really approach this in such a sensible way, that you sort of understand and have that level of self-awareness of the boundaries between work and home. And again, having a sense of, you know, being realistic that we have goals,
right?
And we try.
And I can always be better at it. And we can always be better at it. But I think I would like to think that our kids could say they certainly tried their best.
And we wish that for,
right?
Each one of us wishes that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of those decisions are, like, recently I had an opportunity to travel and I turned down that opportunity because I felt that right now I would like to be with my family. And the length of time was too long and the distance was too far. And I felt like, right now, I'd like to be where I am in this moment in time.
Right. When you were going through that thought process, did a thought cross your mind? Maybe not for now, but at some point
absolutely.
In time. And I bet that sort of made the decision simpler.
Yeah. I'm not turning it down permanently. I'm saying right now, this is not the right opportunity.
Right. And I think that's a really important thought process in navigating this work-home balance, that even if one can't do it now, if you know that at some point in time you'll be able to do it, it just allows you to move forward without a sense of resentment and anger and frustration, because there will come a time that it's going to work for
you. Yeah, so I'd say two things. I find that people often get stuck into this state of permanence where they decide that a situation or something that they're going through is completely permanent and cannot change. And I don't think that they consciously do that, but they live as though it is permanent and they react as though it is permanent. So I think knowing that things change and things can change and they do change all the time is very empowering. But that being said, I also think on the flip side, people, and myself included, you know, need to feel empowered that they can also take action and that they can do things to create change. And, you know, the change may not be immediate, but it's also important not to sit back and say, one day I'll achieve this dream without doing anything actionable to try to make that happen. So it's sort of, I don't know if I'm being clear.
No, I think you're being very clear. It reminds me, there's a term that's used in psychology, fixed mindset versus growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And then this idea that if you see opportunity and you see the ability to act, it helps move you forward. This sense of, I can't move, I'm stuck,
right?
There's no opportunity. It just adds to the frustration. And in truth, there is always, you know, some step. And sometimes it's not even an actionable step. It's an attitude.
Right.
And even that attitude is in itself.
Right.
A way of moving forward.
Correct.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's really important in this work home balance, because those opportunities, that's part of the responsibility of being a woman and having obligations in a lot of different places, and how do you juggle that, and how do you navigate that,
and how do you also like be kind to yourself and forgiving? Like, it could be that you may not have had the best morning, but you could have a better afternoon.
Oh, I love that.
Right? Because
maybe we can put that like on a bumper sticker.
So much of the time we're like, oh, I just messed up. Like, I wasn't present, or I wasn't supportive, or I, you know, just couldn't be there, or whatever it is. And that's okay.
Like, do you feel like a lot of these concepts, these ideas were ideas that you grew up with? Like, is this very ingrained in you, or is it something that you've developed in terms of your own thought processes?
I think I've developed it over time. I think we all hopefully mature as we get older. And there are things that, you know, I think have come with growing up and just getting bigger, hopefully, and more mature.
Right.
And also recognizing that there's so many hours to the day, and how do you starting to be purposeful about, well, what do I want to do with my life? What do I want to accomplish with my life? And then how do you get there? So then when you start to be purposeful about what you want, and then you start thinking about, well, what are the things that I need to do in order to make that happen? Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I admire your gumption and your the fact that you were able to take an idea, bring it to reality, and, you know, from idea to implementation, and that you are able to tap into that sense of purpose in your own life. And I appreciate that you've given us the opportunity, given me the opportunity to listen and to share and to hear and to take your ideas and to be able to share them with others.
So thank you.
Thank you.